She always wanted to be a scientist. As a kid, her dad would only let her launch rockets after she practiced guitar. Much later in her career, Sharon Isbin did make it to space. Find out more about that and her new recording with Isabel Leonard called Alma Española. This is New Classical Tracks, the extended podcast version. I'm Julie Amacher. Well, Sharon, let's start off by talking about your collaboration with Isabel Leonard. It actually started in 2014, right? And it was her idea to try to put these songs together?
Well, she'd always wanted to work with guitar, and it turns out we were with the same, and still are, management at Columbia Artists. So she proposed the idea of contacting me and seeing what we could put together. And of course, we both love Spanish music and doing that in this combo, so it was a natural.
So why do you think it's been four decades since the last major recording of Spanish art songs was released?
Well, to find a major Spanish-speaking singer, Isabel grew up in a household where speaking Spanish was her native language along with English. Her mother is from Argentina. It is really challenging to have that combination and pairing it with guitar. So I think that it was just really fortuitous that we could come together on this. And when you think about the music, it's really all inspired by the guitar. And there are a lot of things in this whole program that when you look at the Garcia Lorca songs, for example, he never wrote them down. And the only way we have access to what he had in his mind in his arrangements was an old early 1930s recording he did with another Argentinian singer called La Argentinita.
Este galapaguito no tiene mare.
So that recording is our access to his arrangements, and of course that gives me a lot of freedom as well. All the composers are connected in some way on this album. In fact, more than half of them were either forced to flee or murdered by fascist governments. So the backstories of the composers is fascinating as well, and their interactions with each other and my interactions with many of them.
I want to talk more about the individual pieces, but first I want to ask you about the title of this recording. I was looking up the word Alma, and it actually has many different meanings. What is the meaning in this context of the title of this recording?
It would really be translated Alma Española to Spanish soul, and it, I think, captures the essence of what we're sharing with our audience.
Now, flamenco is at the heart of Spanish music, and there are two composers on this recording, both of whom were enthusiasts of flamenco. And you mentioned one, well, actually, you mentioned both of them already, Federico García Lorca and Manuel de Falla. Now, have you actually played flamenco? I know you've done a lot of Spanish music.
I've never played flamenco, but actually, growing up in the Twin Cities, I listened to a lot with the Hauser Dance Company. And I think that really got embedded in my consciousness, in my ear, in my heart, and it has been one of the reasons I've been so drawn to Spanish music.
I was kind of struck by Federico García Lorca and how he and Manuel de Falla actually knew one another and had kind of an interesting relationship. The story was so intriguing about how Falla once offered García Lorca an opportunity to hide in his cellar during the Spanish Civil War. Can you share that story?
Well, I was visiting in Spain after winning a competition there and went down to Granada. I wanted to see the beautiful Alhambra and sort of poke around in the gypsy caves there and hear some flamenco music. And one of the things that I managed to track down was the home in which Manuel de Falla lived before he had to flee as well. And this was a very, very modest home. You think of this incredible composer whose 150th anniversary of his birth we're celebrating this year. The passion and the intensity, and here he lived in this modest little place with a little single bed. And everything was pretty much left as it was when he fled. I was told by the docent there that when he learned that Lorca was on the hit list to be killed by Franco, that he invited Lorca to hide out in his cellar, and Lorca turned him down, and of course, unfortunately, he was abducted and killed. And very recently, they've now really confirmed that it was Franco's forces. I don't know why it took so many years, but we've kind of known this all along, but officially confirmed now. And it turns out that after Franco killed Lorca, that Falla figured he was going to be next, so he fled to Argentina. So it's an interesting parallel there. And I remember looking out the window of his living room in De Falla's house and just seeing this beautiful landscape of Granada and the hills and the Alhambra and thinking, what an incredible thing to see every day. It was just a magical, magical place, left pretty much as it was when he fled.
Now, he wrote these seven popular Spanish pieces while he was in Paris, really missing his homeland. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, you think of the fact that he wrote them for piano, but again, so inspired by the guitar. El paño moruno is about a cloth that has lost its value. It's all a metaphor, of course, because it has a stain. The Seguidilla Murciana, a beautiful, fast, dance-like piece. Asturiana, about a pine tree that is weeping and we weep with it, so it has a very sad, nostalgic quality to it. Jota, again, a dance, and it's about lovers meeting. Nana, a beautiful lullaby, and I use harmonics in order to convey at the beginning some of that magical feeling, the very ethereal, transporting kind of sound that the guitar can create with harmonics. Canción, another tale of love. And of course, the rambunctious and intense polo at the end, which if you basically translated the lyrics, it would be something like, I have a pain in my heart, a curse on love, and a curse on the one who made me feel so wretched. So for Isabel, doing these with guitar was, for her, in a way, bringing it back home to the instrument that had always been in the imagination of the composer.
I want to go back to the Garcia Lorca pieces that you arranged for this recording. This is a world premiere, and you were talking a little bit about how he didn't like to write his music down. What I'm kind of intrigued about is how when you and Isabel performed these works, you were really spontaneous in the way that you performed them. Can you talk a little bit about how you were able to do that? Because I know it was challenging to create the arrangements, but then to be able to kind of just sort of go with the flow as you're performing them, how does that work?
Well, we met a number of times to rehearse and go over the lyrics, and she really wanted to make sure that I understand what was happening in each stanza and how best to communicate that. So if there was something very delicate and sensuous, that would create one kind of guitar notation, whereas if it was something very loud and flamenco-like and big strums that would complement the actual words, that would be another direction I would go in. So we really worked this through, revised it, and then once we took it on the road, because we've been performing together now for 3 years, and each time we might discover something new. So being able to road test it like that in addition to having the rehearsals at the beginning and the time to create these arrangements, was really very valuable to do before actually going into a recording studio. There's one song, for example, where a young man heads out in search of a wife and instead, by chance, discovers his long-lost sister. So the very final stanza, Rosalinda herself is speaking, and Isabel suggested that I go up an octave to be that voice.
Oh, I was going to ask you about that. So that's the very first movement of this set, right?
It is, in fact, the Romance of Don Boiso.
Well, there's also a few solo guitar works on this collection, and there are arrangements by other composers like Lope and Emilio Pujol, and you've made a few changes along the way. Can you tell me a little bit about those, like with the Granados piece, Danza Espanol No. 5?
That was an arrangement that Jobet did. Most of what I do is pretty faithful to the original, a few little changes here and there. And it's interesting when I mentioned before that so many of these composers have in common something that really speaks to our time today, which is fleeing fascism. In the case of Granados, he had been invited to come and hear the world premiere of his opera, Goyescas, at the Metropolitan Opera. And afterwards, President Wilson invited him to take a little jaunt over to the White House in D.C., which meant he had to change his travel plans and ended up returning on a ship that was torpedoed by the Germans in World War I, and both he and his wife drowned in that horrible, horrible accident.
There's another set of songs on this recording which have been a regular part of Isabel Letter's repertoire for a while, and you created the guitar arrangements. Is it Javier
Monsalvace, yes. She had suggested to do some of the Cinco Canciones Negras. When I listened to them again, I had actually met Monsalvace some years ago in New York when these pieces were being performed live on stage at Avery Fisher and with orchestra. And this version with piano is what I based mine on. And there were two in particular, a slow, beautiful lullaby which ends the whole recording. And a very fast dance, which is actually about a drunken fellow. It's funny because that one is not much more than a minute and a half long, but it took so many hours and hours and hours of work to transcribe it and learn it because it is such a challenging piece technically, but really fun to perform. In fact, there was one concert we did where Isabel started dancing on the stage with a little kid who'd come up. So we really have a lot of fun with our audiences.
Now, how do you think the guitar arrangements have enhanced these pieces?
Well, I think that you can capture an intimacy with guitar and voice that brings people to their living room, really. And it's very different from having a full orchestra or piano. One of the things that has always inspired me as a player is to listen to singers. Why is that? Because the voice is the ultimate, and how you can be expressive with shaping and legato and the beautiful sounds between notes, so that the guitar, unlike the piano, can actually create sound between notes that imitates the human voice. We call it portamento. So if you listen to some of my playing, you could listen to that, for example, at the beginning of the Granada Danza Española or throughout the Capriccio Arabe. Hear that little wisp of sound that I use as a nuance between the notes. It's kind of like the spices you add to a delicious stew. If you didn't do that, it would be a bit bland. So by doing that and in the right way, I can become a voice as well. Also, one of the advantages I have as a guitarist and playing with my fingernails and the flesh of the finger, as opposed to a pick, is that I have a really infinite variety of colors that I can draw upon. It's like painting on a canvas. And all of that adds to the atmosphere and the expression of the music. So if I'm doing something with a very loud, biting, metallic sound, it'll communicate one flavor. And if it's something very sensuous, way up on the fingerboard to get this beautiful dolce sound, that's a whole other experience. All of that is possible on this remarkable instrument.
Curious, what did you learn about yourself as you were putting this recording together, or maybe through the experience that you've had with performing with Isabel?
Well, this is really the first time that the process of arrangement, particularly I would say in the Lorca songs, and we do a good 9 of them, that process was shared with the singer. And to me, that was just a fabulous experience to be able to draw from her knowledge and her understanding of the music and the lyrics and what she wanted to express and say and make that really a joint venture.
And what kind of a reaction have you received from audiences when you've been out performing these pieces? I mean, I know you talked about the little boy getting up and dancing, but what kind of a reaction have you, you know, has there been anything maybe surprising that surprised you?
Well, one of the things that surprised us is that we're both somewhat comedians and that when funny things happen, that we really run with it. And for example, if I forget the cloth that I play on and somehow jokes come out of the whole thing and the audiences are really engaged by this and amused and laughing out loud. Isabel said that when talking about the Don Boiso, if she had learned that her son had come back with his long-lost sister, she wouldn't be too happy about that. So we really have fun. Audiences experience and share that, and they love this idea of guitar and voice together on the stage. It is so special and unusual and intimate, and it really draws them in.
And you're really creating, it sounds like, a really relaxed atmosphere, which sometimes we don't have that, let's be honest, when you're going to a classical music concert. Sometimes it's a more of a formal setting. Sounds like you're creating something that is much, much, perhaps more welcoming.
There's really no stuffiness when we're on the stage, and we're just ourselves, and we have such a compatible personality and collaboration in just our spirits that it just happens naturally. We don't plan any of the discussions or the things that happen quite spontaneously. It just is there. And I think that's part of the reason that people are also very drawn to our work together, is that they feel like they're witnessing something happening very, very live.
So what else is coming up for you in the next year or so that you're really excited about?
Well, I'm doing a series of concerts with the Pacifica String Quartet. We're doing an all-Italian program. So going from all Spanish with Alma Española to all Italian, that's a fun transition. And we're doing music of Castelnuovo Tedesco, Vivaldi, and Boccherini. Also, I'll be doing a concert in New York at the 92nd Street Y at the beginning of December, and bringing as a guest a former student of mine who's now faculty at the Cleveland Institute of Music, Colin Davin. And I'll be doing a world premiere of a new concerto being written for me by a Spanish composer, Enrique Palomar, out in April in Colorado. So that's just a few of the things that are happening, including this fall, going back, revisiting a fantastic concerto that was written for me by the son of Dave Brubeck, Chris Brubeck, called Affinity. And I premiered it with the Maryland Symphony a couple of years ago, conducted by Elizabeth Scholes. Just did it recently with a number of orchestras, including Leonard Slatkin in Detroit. And it'll be fun to revisit that again for, I think, the fifth or sixth orchestra. And it's got a very jazz-like feeling and a wonderful infectious rhythmic Middle Eastern character at the end. So it's a work that audiences really love. It's not your typical modern music that is scary, but really something that people get excited about.
Oh, I was just remembering how early on in your career, didn't you study in Italy?
I did. I actually began when I was 9 years old by accident. My father, who'd been teaching for many years at the University of Minnesota, was invited to do a sabbatical year. So he brought the family along. My older brother asked for guitar lessons, discovered it was classical, said, absolutely not, not for me. I want to be Elvis Presley. So I volunteered to take his place, and that's how it all began.
Now, did you ever imagine way back then that you would be able to make a career? I mean, your career is so rich and diverse. Did you ever imagine when you were a little kid that this is how your life would be?
No, because I was going to be a scientist. And after we returned to Minneapolis after a year in Italy, I got very involved in model rockets. So that was my thing. My father used to say, you can't launch your rockets until you put in an hour on the guitar. That's how they bribed me to keep practicing. And eventually, I won a competition at the age of 14. The award was to perform with the Minnesota Orchestra in front of 10,000 people. And I walked out and I said to myself, this is even more fun than shooting up my worms and grasshoppers into space. I think I'm going to become a guitarist. That's it.
So have you ever found an opportunity to kind of blend those two passions, your love of science and your love of music?
Well, I was amazed by getting a phone call one day that an astronaut who's now become quite famous, Chris Hadfield from Canada, had discovered a travel guitar that I endorse called the Solowet travel guitar when he was in a park in Houston while he was training at the Johnson Space Center. And it turned out he was soon to go up on his first space mission, and he wanted to take this instrument along with him as a gift to the Russian cosmonauts. So he contacted me and ended up bringing up that travel guitar in 1995 on the space shuttle Atlantis. But another incredible thing, which was he brought up one of my CDs, American Landscapes, with the Coriano Concerto. And this was floating around there for a number of months. And there's even a photo on my website where you can see Earth out the window. So it really was amazing to be able to interact with an astronaut after having had this passion for rocketry and to make it up into space in a different format than I ever envisioned, but it had happened.
Well, your resume is so rich. What is not yet there that you're hoping to add sometime in the future?
It's impossible to guess what's around the corner. There's just so much out there that I'd like to just keep wide-eyed, open-eared, and see what happens. It was amazing to meet Joaquin Rodrigo when I was in Spain, and to be offered the opportunity to be the first person to ever record the Aranjuez Ma Pensée, which Isabel and I included in Alma Española. His daughter Cecilia had given me the score one day and made that beautiful gift. So I think that it's one of the best things you can ever do as a person, as a musician, is really just stay open to the world and be very welcoming to wonderful ideas as they happen.
Sharon has been talking about her new recording with Isabel Leonard called Alma Española. That's new classical tracks from American Public Media, with special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode. I'm Julia Macher.